are listening to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Here's your host, Tyus France.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast. I'm your host, Tyus France. Sitting across from me is my good friend, Alex. Thanks for being here.
Love to be here. Thank you, Tyus.
So today we are going to be really following up on last week's episode where we talked a bit about the news and we left it off on a cliffhanger. There was a couple topics that we simply didn't have time to get to, and one of those topics is probably going to be long, so we're basically just going to make this into its own episode. I'm going to start off with this. In Toronto, there was this thing with some steps. It's a really small story. It's really unimportant, but I think it makes a very powerful point about bureaucracy and government efficiency and so forth. So there's this park. And in this park, there's this little hill area that it's pretty hard for elderly people to get up and down this. And people just wanted steps there. And it took 8 steps to go from one level to another, right? So the city gets together and they say, you know, what is it going to cost for us to build these steps? And the numbers come back, and the numbers are incredible. So they get these quotes anywhere from $65,000 to $150,000. So for 8 steps, that means we're looking at between $8,000 to $19,000 per stair, per step. That's what they're getting a quote on for this. And they're considering building this based off of the fact that people want it. So this gentleman goes out there, and he hires a homeless guy, and for $550, he just builds the steps, right? No big deal. He just goes, I'm going to build it. And he does it for $550, which that right there was the initial story. The initial story was, look at how insane this is and how much they're wanting to charge for this based off of whatever bureaucracy and process and regulation that they need to put in to build steps. And then this guy just goes out and gets it done for, you know, almost half a grand. And so that was the first part of the story. It evolved a little bit after that. They destroyed his steps. The city blocked them off for a little bit and said, oh, you can't use these. They're fine. They were fine stairs. They worked fine. Everybody was happy with them. And they blocked them off. Then they destroyed them. And the city plans now to rebuild them for a measly $10,000. So fantastic that they can do it for, you know, 1/6 or even less than 1/6 of their initial price they quoted. Pretty tragic that it's still 20 times what a private citizen can do with it. And it really shows the level of efficiency that this government entity is capable of working within and how efficient a private market could be with it. Do you have any thoughts on this particular story?
Well, but Tyus, who would tear down the steps if it weren't for the government?
Well, who would tear down the completely functional brand new steps?
Yes.
That actually created a job for a homeless guy.
Yes.
Yeah, it's
just such an example of how private citizens who care about their communities can do so much more than the government. I think libertarians, we've talked about this in past episodes, we get a bad rap for being people who don't care, right? We don't care about people, and it couldn't be further from the truth. We care a lot about people. We care about your money. We care about your livelihood. We care about your freedom, and we care about you. And the reason that we care about you is because, you know, we're motivated to allow everyone to live their life the way he or she sees fit, right? And this is an example where there's this lovely park, right? And there's people who want in a more accessible way to get up and down the stairs, right? And so I believe it, like a retired auto mechanic, I think he was, or something like that, a gentleman who's got decades of tradecraft experience at building stairs. It wasn't like these were, you know, like I built them. Like no one would trust stairs I built. But
I probably would if they looked sturdy.
I mean, if they look sturdy, sure. And you know, you always send down like a test penguin, right, to see if they crumble. But the thing is that this is really no different, in my opinion, than people who are active in repairing potholes or any of these sorts of things on your city roads. Did you know that the Clark County Commission believes the cheapest that they can get a mile of paving done is somewhere between $1 and $2 million per mile.
Wow.
It's nowhere near $1 and $2 million per mile for a city road. But here in Clark County, right, we pick the croniest capitalist, which is currently Las Vegas Paving Corp, We give them the ability to go out and build the roads or whatever it is. And they just gouge the taxpayer. And that's money that could have gone to other things, schools, parks, whatever. Even if we didn't lower taxes a dime, do you really want to spend $1 million per mile for roads or 10,000, even 10,000 is too much, right?
For eight steps. Stairs?
That's ridiculous.
For eight stairs. Over $1,000 a step.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, to me, that's insane. And that's what's so great about this story is it shows that if you care about your community, you can help it directly for far less and far greater value than if we go through the government. One thing that is often brought up is like welfare, for example, right? Well, most of the allotment of money for welfare goes to its administration. It's tragic, right? If you were to donate to a charity that you knew 90% of it went to the pockets of the people running the charity and only 10% of it went to the charity, you wouldn't give money to that charity, right? I mean, nobody would. Who would do that? Nobody. But we do that for the government, right? They get a free pass on being inefficient and helping less people. The charities that we donate to and that we'll often work with here in the community for LP Nevada, Aid for AIDS Nevada, Opportunity Village, these are places that are very, very concerned about keeping themselves with low administrative costs. And that's why so many people like myself and like Brandon Ellison and Penn Jillette and I, you know, we had a nice group earlier this year even that went out for the AIDS walk. The reason that we support these organizations is because they efficiently use the money to do what they set out to do, right? We picked where we wanted to donate to, and we did it based on our belief that they're using the money most efficiently and that that money is the best spent. We want to help our communities too. We just don't think that the government is an efficient way to do it. I mean, they're gonna take half of the money we give them and blow up people in Syria, and then they're going to take the other half and they're going to pay off all the people that got them into office, and then eventually maybe a small fraction of a half a percent of the federal budget will go to helping people. And they continuously do this. So what do you think about...
Well, there's no way the government can be more efficient than the private market. And I'll give you an example that is very close to home because it's what I do for a living right now. I'm an entertainment manager. So as an entertainment manager, there's a client that wants a performer and then there's a performer. And most performers discuss that with the client and they work out their agreement and that's the end of it. I'm something that goes in between that. I take a percentage by being a third party in that agreement. So the only reasons you should ever have me is if something's going to be so complicated or unwieldy or it's going to be very unpleasant and I'm going to smooth that out. That's my function. And I talk to a lot of performers and a lot of them are like, oh, I really want an entertainment manager. And I'm like, no, you don't. You're going to lose 20% right off the top of what you make. So like, I'm a bad thing to have. And in this situation, that's the reason the government can't be more efficient than the market by itself is because just by having administrative costs alone, if that was all we were looking at, if we weren't looking for taxes and incentives, subsidies and regulations, if we took even all of that just off the table and said, you know what, these guys are going to take the money, then they are going to find the most efficient way of spending the money. Even if that was all they did, it can't be more efficient than those people going out there and spending the money they want to, the way they want to directly. It can't be done. So that's why everything that the government runs, unfortunately, I hate to say it, everything the government runs is going to be less efficient than if it was run by the people that really want it in place. Now, I understand that some of these things become massive as far as economy of scale. There's definitely ways to poke holes in it when you're saying, well, what about civil defense? What about how do you deal with court systems and things like that? And I'm sure we're going to go into different ways those things can be handled in the future. And we have a difference of opinion on the monarchy versus anarchy aspect of it. So there's going to be some different solutions depending on who you talk to. But ultimately, there's never a situation where if you're just talking about money and getting something done efficiently, where adding a third person into that equation is going to be more profitable than having less people involved in it. Or I shouldn't say profitable, I should say efficient.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of the movie from the 90s, Office Space, right? Where you have the, well, what do you say you do here, right? Some of us have seen these memes online, and if you haven't, they're pretty funny. But that's what this reminds me of, right? Whenever the government gets involved in something as simple as building a set of stairs for a park that these concerned citizens wanted, they weren't saying, they weren't demanding, like, we're not going to vote for you. I mean, there was no threats of extortion, right? There was just, it was just a, hey, this is dangerous for us to go down this hill. Can we get some steps built here? And then for the city to turn around and do an open bid and find $60,000 to $105,000, just imagine how much money they must be spending on other aspects of the government. That's how much they're willing to spend on steps. And that's the reason that they're telling them, well, you're going to have to wait a couple of years for us to get these steps done because we have to raise that much money. I mean, that's just so ludicrous to me.
It's right out of Parks and Recreation, like it, the comedy show. Really, it's like an episode written right from it.
Yes, it's so sad that we, and even in that show, right, there was such a, despite the libertarian overtones of Ron Swanson, right, you end up with very kind of, you know, statist, I don't know if statist is the right word, but, you know, the government's the answer, right? And you know, we have to think about, whenever we want something, we have to think about, is this something the government should be doing? Or is it something that we can do together in a small scale? Right. And this is so well exemplified by, and I don't like HOAs for a lot of reasons. I don't live in one, but I know people that do like HOAs, right? And they live there because they do things on a small, you knew you what you were signing up for when you got there scale, and you have a direct voice. It's a small community of maybe 200 homes or even that's probably even a larger one, you know.
It's voluntary is the big difference.
And it's voluntary. You chose to move there. You chose to abide by those rules and regulations and this sort of thing. They get roads paved for the development and for that this sort of thing, not the city or county, and they do it for far less than $1 million a mile. They're an example right now of how a small, decentralized, voluntary, private market solution to some place like where you live can build roads and parks cheaper and better, and they're much more responsive to what the community wants, rather than have to call the Libertarian Party of Nevada and say, hey, we want a new park, right? And we're going to go then send our lobbyists to county commission meetings that are 6 or 7 hours long during the workday on Tuesday to try and lobby on your behalf as citizens. That's the convoluted process it takes, even if you don't go yourself. That's the process, right? You have to work in this massive organization to try and get lobbying efforts done, and you have to convince an entire county that you need a park or something. Or, right, is it much easier just to get like 100 neighbors and say, hey, if we all pitch in $100, we can have this grass seed every year, and now we have this beautiful park that we can all enjoy, and you didn't have to if you didn't want to, right? But everyone agreed, you know what, this raises our values, this, you know, whatever. And so you chose on a small scale. You only had to convince 99 people. You didn't have to convince an entire county the size of Clark that you needed to have a park or a golf course or whatever. And so it's just, we have to remember, Tyus, I think, that whenever we see stories like this, we have to remind ourselves that we are the answer, right? Not the government. The government's the answer for maybe a couple things, and we could argue and go back and forth, like you say, about
we will
which of those
just
are.
Not this episode.
Yeah, not this episode. But at the end of the day, we have to remember that as much as we advocate for individual liberty as libertarians, we are also advocating for individual responsibility. If you want it, then no one should be stopping you.
Yep.
And especially not the city government or in Toronto. I believe it was Toronto, right?
I think it's Toronto, yes.
Yeah, I mean, so sorry, Toronto, yeah, if it's not you. But you know what I mean? It's just ridiculous that they would deem these steps so unsafe and they don't follow all these laws and ordinances and this sort of thing. These are the things that prevent 95% of the community from having something to enjoy because maybe it doesn't service 100% of the needs of all the community across the entire county simultaneously.
Yeah.
It's just silly.
It is crazy. And you make some great points about, you know, an HOA being a voluntary organization. Communism works as long as everybody's okay with it. The only issue is when it becomes too
voluntary. Communism.
Yeah, when it's voluntary. Think about it. Like, I used to live with some roommates, and we'd put food in the fridge, and it was communist food. Everybody could have that food. We had an agreement across the board. So that's a fantastic point. The other point you made that I think is really, really valid and important, so important, is the personal responsibility, the personal involvement. Ultimately, that's what it's going to come down to, and that's where all change is going to come from. I don't know have we ever told the story of how this podcast came to be?
I don't think so. Maybe the beginning.
Okay,
episode?
I'm going to tell a little story about the podcast and how it came to be. So we do these mixers out here. If you are in Clark County, actually, if you're in pretty much anywhere in Nevada, and you go to lpnevada.org. Gosh, every time I say that, I second guess myself. If you go to the our website, lpnevada.org, and you can check out events, and we've got events everywhere. And that's exactly what I went to. I went to one event, and at the very first event, I said, "How can I get involved? What can I do to help out?" And Alex came up and was sitting there, and he's like, "Well, it kind of depends on what you're good at and what you know how to do." And I've hosted, I don't know, a half a dozen different podcasts over my life, and I mentioned, "Yeah, I can do podcasts." And he went, "Great." So we basically set up a plan to create this podcast. And during that, we had somebody that we were thinking would be a really great co-host, but it didn't work out scheduling wise. So Alex said, "You know what? I'm going to step up and do it." And now that's exactly how he's here, and that's how this show has come to be. But the reason I bring that story up as an example is it's an example of two people basically taking responsibility to make something happen. So I offer what I can do, and I step up to that, and then we don't have a co-host, but you know, Alex basically suggested the thing to begin with, so he stepped up and took responsibility and jumped in and grabbed the seat. And ultimately, if you want to see change in your local government, in your state government, in your national government, you're going to have to be the change that creates that. You there's nobody else that you can look to. And we're so used to, we're so comfortable looking at somebody else and saying, "Well, when is Trump going to do something about this?" Well, let's just assume he's not. Let's start from that assumption. It's probably not going to happen. Be the change you want to see in the world. Thank you, Gandhi.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm reminded of a story that I learned at Arizona Boy State, which is an American Legion program, all 50 states, I believe. And essentially, one of the stories that was told by one of the veterans is that's exactly the attitude you have to have. So many people sit around and go, "Well, you know what? I'll let George do it, right? We'll just let this other person take care of what it is." And it's important that if you want to see changes to your community, to your city, to your county, to your state, then get involved. If you're listening to this podcast, you're either checking us out or you're a libertarian. If you live in Nevada, please get involved. Message us on Facebook, hit us up on Twitter, hit us up pretty much and almost all social media, or you can email us. You can email me, ed@lpnevada.org. Look me up at /AlexMD on Facebook. Just let one of us know. We'll get you plugged in. We have volunteer events. We're recruiting heavily right now for leadership positions. And just like Tyus here, we want to make Tyus one of many success stories that we have where we had someone come to a social and go, "How can I get involved?" And instead of just asking and then kind of passively going, "Okay, well, I'll wait for them to contact me and get me plugged in," Tyus took personal responsibility to make sure that this happens. And so I would love to thank him right now just for all of the hard work that you do for the podcast, because it wouldn't happen without you.
Thanks.
And there are so many things like that in the LP of Nevada that we can say, without this key person bringing that aspect to the team, we wouldn't have had it. We wouldn't have had a lobbyist without Wendy. We wouldn't have the great social media we have without Troy. We wouldn't have great websites without our IT division, like with Liz and David. We have so much going for us right now, and we're building a huge team, both at the county and state levels. We have county affiliates that are getting organized all over the state. This is an exciting time to get into the Libertarian Party of Nevada. And so I would challenge you to hit us up, lpnevada.org/volunteer, if you're looking to do some more general things like phone banking, tabling, knocking on doors. We're always looking for that. That during campaign season, that's 90% of what we're doing, right? That's how you get into the communities and say, "Look, we care. I know they don't care. I know the big boys don't care about you. We do. We have a solution. We can help fix Nevada's schools. We can help fix Nevada's crumbling infrastructure. Just help us. Help us grow so we can put someone in office in 2018.
Alex, random question. It's going to come back to the point, though. Have you ever taken a CPR class?
Yes.
And do you remember when they say, when it first starts, you don't say, "Somebody dial 911.
Right.
They say, "You dial 911. They point the finger at somebody and you call them out. You make that one person call 911. The reason you do that is because if you say, "Somebody dial 911, nobody's going to call. They're going to assume the other person's going to do it. So I'm talking to you. If you're listening, this is not about everybody. I'm talking to you. You take action. You do something about it. You contact us. You make this place a better place to live, to be. You change the world in a positive way that's going to make a difference. That is the libertarian principle right there. Personal responsibility, personal ownership. And that comes to property rights, but that comes to the acts that you take every single day. Speaking of ownership and owning things, let's transition a little bit. So we've got Jeff Sessions is in the news a lot right now.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. One of the things he is up there about is civil asset forfeiture. So this is one of the things that'll get my blood boiling real quick. So I'm just going to explain what civil asset forfeiture is first. And Jeff Sessions is involved in it due to something called equitable sharing. So I'll go into that too.
Wow, that's such a misleading name.
Oh, it's great. Ugh. It's exactly the awful stuff.
If we rob a jewelry store, we'll split it six ways is kind of the way.
Yeah. I just saw a meme that said like, what was it? It was like the Federal Reserve Bank is not federal. It's not, there's no reserves and it's not a bank. And then it had the...
Accurate.
Yeah. All of these different
by
government
the way,
programs.
Hashtag audit the Fed.
Yeah. The Patriot Act is not patriotic. And yes. It had all these different, like all of these names that they sound good. And then you're just like, net neutrality was
misleading
one of them.
Titles. Yeah. 101. That's like every bill you want to get passed. Just be like the happy balloons bill. Woo. Yeah. No exactly. One likes happy balloons, right? No one hates those.
Yeah. Wait, you don't like happy balloons? You want all the balloons to be sad?
Exactly. It's such a... anyway, so what is civil asset forfeiture?
Good question, Alex. I'm glad you asked. So civil asset forfeiture, here's the pitch on it. And it's going to sound... I hope it sounds reasonable because if it doesn't, then my bias is coming through. And by the way, I'm very biased. So civil asset forfeiture is the idea that, let's say Alex is a drug dealer and I'm a cop.
I'm not.
But... He's not. And I'm not. Neither of those two things are true. So if I find these drugs on him, the idea is I should seize those drugs from him, right? That makes sense. So that's the basis of civil asset forfeiture. Now, it expands a little bit from there. So let's say that same scenario, but now he has a lot of cash on him.
My drug money.
Your drug money, right? So now it's maybe a safe assumption to say that the cash came from the drugs. So I'm not only going to seize the drugs, I'm also going to seize the cash. Okay. And now maybe I do this seizure at his home, and his home has all of this drug equipment and stuff in there. So maybe we've got a whole drug den. So now I'm seizing the drugs, the cash, and the home. I hope that sounds like maybe a reasonable thing to do, because that's the argument for it. And I'm going to go into a little bit later about the argument against it. Before I do, I'm going to talk about equitable sharing. I'm trying to give you everything from the side that I'm against.
From the government's perspective.
Yes, from the government's perspective. So that's the asset forfeiture side of it, right? You're these people are forfeiting their assets because it's used for illegal purposes. Okay. Equitable sharing, what that does is if... A lot of states have limits on how many on the assets you can take. But the federal government doesn't seem to have those limits in place.
Surprise.
Yeah. So the federal government's just unlimited.
Gasp.
So what the idea between equitable sharing is, if I'm the state, I can seize Alex's assets even above state levels. I give those assets to the federal government, and then they gift 80% of them back to me. So I have just... found a way around having caps on what I can seize from Alex. I don't even have a way of spinning that to make it sound good. It's not good.
That's literally what your government is doing right now, and it's worse. I'm sorry, can't hold back any longer. It's worse than that because you don't even have to be convicted of a crime. You merely need to be accused, and they can seize your assets, tie you up for months or years. There's a story, heartbreaking, that Reason.com, I believe, broke about a woman who had been pulled over. She had $10,000 in cash in her vehicle. She was driving to the bank. She's one of those, you know, little old ladies in New Mexico, right, I believe it was, where she was saving up money in cash, and then she was going to take it to a huge deposit at her bank. And, you know, some people like having, you know, their Scrooge McDuck-style cash just lying around. And she got pulled over, as it happens, for something innocuous like a broken taillight. And they found this cash. They assumed, oh, this must be criminally related. They not only took the cash, they took the car. And it, later on, of course, they determined that she was not doing anything illegal or wrong. But they still kept this stuff. And it took her years in court to finally get it back from the government. And even then, I think she still had to wait like months to get her car back out of impound. She had to pay all these fees for having her car in impound for years while she fought this. I mean, it was like outright extortion of this woman. And that's what your government is doing. And just because it hasn't maybe happened to you yet, doesn't mean it won't. Doesn't mean that it's not going to be you driving with an $1,000 CD, certificate of deposit. You know, not like a exclusive collection, like limited edition.
It's a really nice CD.
It's a really nice CD.
It's like Prince's last CD. Yeah, which is, he signed it.
Nobody would ever say because CDs are all low quality audio. But in any event, right, if they seize that from you or seize your vehicle, that's your means of producing money, right? Driving to work. Even if you did something wrong, they should at least wait until they've convicted you in court. You are supposed to have the right in this country of a fair and unbiased trial, and the government is not supposed to be able to come and put people in your home, quarter them. They're not supposed to unreasonably search or seize your property until and unless the investigation has concluded and you're guilty. Even then, I'm not a big fan of this, but at least from that, at least that would be a common sense. Like, at least convict them, right, before you take things. Maybe it's evidence, sure, but as soon as you've determined that someone's not going to be convicted or even pursued in a trial, that should be an immediate grounds to give them their property back. Like, yep. There shouldn't be a process and fighting it in court and getting it back. It should be automatic. We're sorry, ma'am, wrong person. You weren't doing anything wrong. You know, we got a weird, erroneous tip. Whatever. Mistakes happen, but surely not years and years of a woman's life dragged through court trying to get her vehicle and some of her money recovered. And a lot of people just won't fight it because they don't think they have any chance of winning. And that's just absolutely not true. If you need legal assistance, there are a lot of great organizations that provide legal help to people who have had their assets seized by the government and they didn't do anything wrong. Definitely check out, obviously, the ACLU of Nevada. Definitely check out, I believe it's the Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF. And, you know, this sort of thing. There are a lot of organizations out there that will take your case because they know you will win, and you should. And I believe I even saw earlier, I don't know if you saw this, a statistic that indicated that actual theft by all the thieves in the entire country last year stole less money than was seized via civil asset forfeiture.
Well, it's a little misleading. But you're right. It definitely is true if you're just talking about burglary. So burglary is $3.5 billion per year. The highest estimate is about $4.5 billion per year. But I believe $3.5 billion is what the FBI reported as far as burglary is concerned. Asset forfeiture is $5 billion per year. That means the government is burglaring more money per year than criminals are. Yeah. Now, it's a little misleading because if you include car theft in there, that changes the number and it gets up to about $12 billion. So, but car theft is a whole different ballgame. So, but yes, essentially the government is taking more money than burglaries are every single year from people. And a couple of things that are really important. You mentioned due process earlier, and there is a difference. The way they get around this due process thing is you are innocent until proven guilty. And you have, that's in the Constitution. Like, what is that, 5th, 6th, and 7th? Is all about how you're basically handled in court, I think. So I might be getting that wrong. You can write in and tell me how wrong I am about which amendments of the Constitution.
Yes, for you constitutionalists out there, you keep us honest about those amendments.
So you have all these rights, innocent until proven guilty. Big, very, very important thing that we have in the United States that's brilliant. But your assets do not. So your assets are guilty until proven innocent. So that's how they get away with holding this stuff.
I had no idea. That's crazy. That's an insane argument.
That is the workaround that they've got on it. Your assets are guilty until proven innocent. So in several cases, people have lost their homes. Their homes are simply taken from them. And they have to prove the innocence of these possessions that say these things had nothing to do with it. There was a gentleman that was basically doing one of those pot dispensary things, or I don't know whether he was on the manufacturing or sales side or whatnot, but he was involved in that. The government came in and they took his house from him. And he's like, the house had nothing to do with it. And they're like, well, you made money off of this. You bought a house. House is ours. There's also tons of videos online where you can, where people are talking to police officers about, what do you guys do with the stuff that you're seizing? And they're like, oh, we buy coffee machines for the police force, things like that. So they're, it is criminal what is taking place here. They're literally stealing from citizens. Now, one example of this that I wanted to bring up is the IRS has stolen. I'm just going to say it as it is. Sorry, guys. You can come at me if you don't like the word stolen, but that's what's going on here. The IRS has seized millions and millions of dollars from businesses without any process. They simply come in and seize the money. Here's what they're doing. They look at bank accounts. And now I don't know how they exactly know which bank accounts these are, because they're looking for bank accounts that are getting frequent deposits of just under $10,000. And I know that if it's over 10 grand, it has to be reported to the IRS. So the IRS is somehow auditing these and finding out certain people that are depositing a little less than $10,000. And then they simply go in and they seize the entire bank account. And they say, this is ours now. Until you can prove that you're not laundering money, we own all this money. And there's so many problems with this. There's many, many businesses that if you own a business, you know that there's certain there's just a certain amount of money you take in. If you own a restaurant, it's not unreasonable for you to, if you're depositing once a week, to deposit $9,000. That's actually pretty reasonable to have happen. And again, you're guilty, at least that property is guilty until proven innocent. Well, the IRS, when people fight back and say, hey, we want this money back, this is not nefarious, there's nothing bad about how I got this money, the IRS doesn't just give them their money back or even go to court with them. What they do is they say, well, you know what, why don't you take half and we'll take the other half. They negotiate with them. And the fear of going to court with the government is a very real fear, because you know who you're really going to court against? You're going to court against yourself. The government has basically an unlimited amount of money, because it's not just you versus the government. It's you versus my bank account and Alex's bank account and every other person that's paying taxes to fund something that essentially can just continue to pull off of the resources of the people in order to fight you. So you're fighting a country. You're not fighting a prosecutor. You're fighting a country to try and get your assets back. So the way of going about this, it's not going to come down to every single person that has their assets seized needs to go and fight individually. We need to fight the policy at the beginning, right where it is right now, and say, you know what, if Jeff Sessions is trying to expand this, we need to immediately attack that. If anybody's trying to expand it, we need to attack it. If anybody is trying to restrict it, we need to support that. And we need to do it every single opportunity we see, on the local government, on the federal government, on state government. We need to get in there and do something about it.
Cool. Yeah, no, I think that's excellent. And again, it takes us back to the point we made earlier. We need your involvement. The county commissions and state legislatures, they need to hear from citizens that say, I have a very real concern about this and how much money you've seized here, especially in Las Vegas. I mean, we have people of all stripes that come here. And when they get their assets seized, a lot of them don't even live here, right? Most, I would be
very transient city.
Yeah, and so they're not going to stick around and fight that fight. And of course, the people who do fight it are disproportionately upper class, right? Why? Because they know lawyers that are like, why would you settle for that? Don't do it, right? You're less likely in poor communities in Las Vegas or across the state of Nevada to encounter criminal defense attorneys and people who are specialists in this area. And so you're less likely to think that you even have a chance. And you do. You have a very real chance of winning, but it's going to take years right now, because we've set up this guilty until proven innocent assets way of doing things. And we as a community have to come up, we have to do better. We have to come up with a better way to protect the large number of people who are who have their assets seized, and they didn't have anything to do with an illegal act. They were merely accused. They were in the wrong place at the wrong time. It's happened to countless people across the entire country. But here in Nevada, New Mexico, all over the Southwest, we have to do better as a community. We can't allow this to stand, and especially because it disproportionately affects people who can't fight back, just like, you know, the people fighting back against the Donald Trump wall seizures. The people fighting back are the ones that know they can win, know they have a strong case, and they have the money to fund it. And there are politicians all over the country that are angry that somebody would have the balls, right, to fight the government on this and win. But you will. And if you don't fight, if you... We're not just sitting around waiting. Well, maybe some of you are, but we're not waiting around for the whole thing to collapse and then we'll rebuild better and better. We need to take an active role today, right now, in fighting the government in smart ways. We have our day in court. If you believe that the Commission on Presidential Debates is unfair, join with that coalition. The Our America Initiative with Gary Johnson's kind of getting rebooted. I think we mentioned that last week. These are people who are actively fighting the injustices in our system, the inherent biases, racial, sexist, and classist biases in our system, and trying to eliminate those to make the government and work for all the people and make it as small as possible. Again, I love local. I'm a minarchist. I mean, again, we can get into the whole debate, but you know, I'm a big fan of local government because that's somebody who I could meet, right? I could sit down with a Mayor Goodman, right? I could go meet a North Las Vegas City Councilman. I have no chance of ever meeting Donald Trump. I have no chance of meeting Jeff Sessions. We need to be very interested in being involved in our local communities and making sure that our voices are being heard and that we begin advocating for liberty at this grassroots level. And I'm hoping that this podcast is reaching a large number of people here in Nevada, and that as you listen to it, you're learning more about how you can get involved in fighting. Write letters to the editor, right? Write op-eds. If you're a good writer and you're not really a big fan of other things, we'll happily review them for you. Just email editor@lpnevada.org. We will happily give you guidance and review them, help you get published. Send us op-eds. Send us letters to the editor. We want to help you get published so that you can start affecting your hometowns and communities across Nevada in a libertarian direction. It's not just civil asset forfeiture. There are all kinds of crimes the government's committing on a regular basis. If you're passionate about one of them, then talk about it. Write about it. Don't let it go. Don't let George do it. Right? Be involved in it. Gandhi, right?
Be the change you want to see in the world.
Yeah.
We are out of time. Obviously, the message of this whole show, please get involved. If you don't know how to get involved, ask, because we're here. We're going to help you. You can reach us on the podcast at podcast@lpnevada.org. Come to one of our mixers, as we mentioned earlier. For all of that information, lpnevada.org is the place to go. And until next week, make it all about freedom.
This show is brought to you by the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Music is provided by T. Sims. Please support the show by subscribing, sharing it with friends, and leaving a positive review on iTunes. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit lpnevada.org. Thank you for listening.